Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Deirdre Kinahan. Deirdre, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. You say the best thing you can do as a cancer survivor is to impart your knowledge to people who are in other words, how do you tell your children?
Well, the best advice I got, I had breast cancer 5 years ago, Joe.
Okay.
And when I was diagnosed, I phoned up a friend of mine to collect the kids from school because obviously I was just reeling and in a state of great distress. And I remember chatting to her and she said, Deirdre, her husband had had cancer 4 years earlier. She says, whatever you do, don't tell them till you have the full picture. Okay. Don't tell them till you have your full diagnosis and your treatment plan. And I wanted to ring in and say that was the best advice I ever got, because there's quite a few weeks between the initial diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going in and seeing the consultants, and then they tell you the kind of cancer you have and the kind of treatment that's available to you. And then about another 2 weeks later, you go back and you get the plan. You know, we're going to start with chemotherapy. Yeah. We're going to move to radiotherapy, etc. So there's a period of about 4 or 5 weeks. Now, I won't say it wasn't the most difficult time of my life, mm-hmm. keeping it from them and keeping the stress and the terror from them. But in the end of the day, it was brilliant, because when we sat them down on a Sunday evening to say, you know, we're going to talk to you. Well, as my husband said, just want to talk to you about, you know, mommy's health. Do you know, we had the full picture and plan. We were able to answer all their questions, mm-hmm. tell them the type of cancer it was, the kind of treatment I'd be getting, the dates, how long it would go on for, because they're full of questions. Now, I know it might be different with younger kids, but my kids were 16 and 18. Okay. So they were leaving cert and junior cert. Like, there's no good time, but that was just like, what a year, you know? And should they go off Googling it, Joe? So you kind of need to be able to tell them exactly what cancer it is, what's going to be happening. And I just found that kicking off the journey that way put everybody on a sure footing, and we were just honest and open with the kids from then on in.
Okay. And your children, as you say, were 16 and 18. Did any of them say anything to you, Deirdre, before you told them?
I'll tell you, my eldest daughter, Shifra, she was 18, she was doing her leaving, mm-hmm. and she did say to me after it, I knew there was something going on. I knew there was something up, because we were up and down to the hospital, you know, like yo-yos, and you were, you know, making one excuse and another excuse, and me and Dad sitting in the car heading up to Dublin again and again. So she had an inkling, but we had batted it off to a degree that she had no idea that it was, you know, something as serious as breast cancer. And I think if you spoke to them now, they would be very happy that we waited and told them, you know, when we did. Because also it took like that from, I got diagnosed like around the end of October, and I didn't start treatment till the 10th of December. And like that 6 weeks, Joe, you walk off the cliff, you know, you literally look death straight in the face. And you go into kind of panic, fight and flight. And then slowly but surely, you roll yourself back in. You listen to the medics. You listen to the experts. You talk yourself around. You get yourself ready. So by the time you sit down with your kids, you're in a stronger place with it. And you believe in what you've been told and believe that this treatment and this journey is worth going on. Do you know what I mean? So, I just found that great advice, and I would pass it on to anyone. Wait and get the full picture before you talk to them.
Okay. I'll come back to you in a sec, Deirdre. Joe at RT.ie. Susan Thompson. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. And what Deirdre was telling us, hers were 16 and 18, which is, in one sense, if there is such a word, a more mature age.
Yes,
age were your children?
My youngest was only four and a half, up to 14. So four of them, four, 9, 12 and 14. And it was, it was around COVID as well. So it was a double whammy, if anything. Yeah, so it was tough. Yeah, I was diagnosed late 2020.
Okay.
So I knew, but I kept them in the loop the whole time. Like, they knew I'd found something and I was going in for tests and I was getting checked up.
Okay.
Then mine was very quick, like from diagnosis. Well, by the time I'd all my lab results, everything back, I was having the operation the week after. So finished work, finished everything, was on sick leave. So, and then various lockdowns, the children knew straight away. But I told them age appropriately what was happening. And I wasn't fully sure of what treatment was going to be. Like, that Christmas was tough because it was kind of the period between the surgeries and starting treatment. And I'd known, like, I was going to need the full, as my surgeon said, the kitchen sink of treatment. You know, I needed I went through 5 months chemo and 1 month radiotherapy. So that was very tough. It was very tough. Now, it was tough on everyone, not just the person going through it, but the people around you. Like my poor husband, he's fantastic. Like, he really held the show on the road. And
okay.
The children as well. The children are great. In you know, they keep you grounded. They keep you structured. So even though everything's just all falling down around you, you can still get on the floor and play with the kids. You know, they're a great distraction for when you're just going through it, because I know it's very topical at the moment with Princess Catherine, but God love her. Like, at least when we get a diagnosis like that, we can retreat into our own home environment and just be surrounded by our nearest and dearest, and we can just tell whoever we want and keep it under wraps. But, like, she can't. She's not in that situation. And now she needs that. Like, that's what everybody needs. You need to retreat. You need to, like, when you're going through treatments, like, out of everything, you know, the treatment is tough. Like, we all know people who've gone through, or you've gone through it, you know, who's gone through it themselves. But chemotherapy is very tough. It's very tough mentally. And, you know, like, what I found is I just sank really, really low. My mind was the worst out of all the surgeries. And I've had four or five now. I had a big one last year, I had my reconstruction. Out of everything I've been through, all the dreams, it was the effect on my mental health was definitely the worst. Because as your previous caller, Deirdre, was saying, you do go there. Your mind just does go there. And
Susan, like, would your children have occasion to notice that or to know about that?
Yes. Because what a lot of people don't tell you is, because your mood is so low during chemotherapy, you cry. Like, you know, I think I cried most days. And it was more of a release. It was like, oh no, it's coming. And it would always come when I was at the kitchen sink trying to wash up a few dishes in the evening, you know, like in the middle, if I had just chemo that day, or I knew it was coming up in a day or two. And I'd have the radio on, I could have you on, or I could have whatever in the background, or the news, and a sad story would come on. Mm-hmm. And it would be somebody who I wouldn't have even known. Yeah. And I was like, I'd start crying. Oh, that poor family. I was just in the depths. And my kids would walk in, and the older boys were great. Like, they were 12 or 14, and they would say, oh, Mammy, you're doing great. You're getting there. Or they'd give me a hug, and then they'd go on about their way. You know, they'd have their phones, or they'd be doing schoolwork or Zoom calls. My youngest daughter, thankfully, 4 was a good age, if there is any good age. Once her days were still structured and she was fed and, you know, had her toys and her games and, you know, had some mammy time. And thankfully my sister was here as well, and my good friend Maria. They would play with her and amuse her as well some days. And you really need that as well, just, you know, because they still need attention.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
I'm
sorry, but when you're going through treatment, you're not well, and you need to actually be a little bit selfish yourself and just accept it. Look, I'm not going to be able to be there 24/7 for my kids. I'm going to have to retreat, and some days I'm not well. But I'll tell you a funny story. One particular day, I was having my daily cry. It sounds so stupid now. Like, I probably haven't cried since I've been in treatment, but it's your mood. You know, it's just the combination of all the medicines, you know, to get you right. But the boys would hug me, but my younger chap, he's 9, he's fantastic, Aidan. He's a very matter of fact, you know, says it as it is, just a great character. And he came in one day, and I was in, you know, having my little tears and washing away, and he says, Mammy, he said, I'm fed up. And I said, what's wrong, you know? I thought he was going to be sympathetic. No, he turned around and he says, Mammy, he says, I'm fed up seeing you crying all the time.
Okay.
and I said to him, I said, you know what, Aidan, I said, I'm fed up too.
I know the feeling.
I was so fed up, but that was a good kick. That things kind of turned around that day. And now, in saying that, Joe, I was doing everything to lift my mood. Like I started jogging. I was doing everything that
Great energy,
to...
yeah.
The other thing I'm keen
to get across today is that, as we've discovered so many times in LiveLand, the vast majority of outcomes, thank God, on cancer are positive.
They're not. Touch wood.
Yes, the vast majority.
They are, yeah. But now I'm saying
not
that
all,
it depends.
Obviously.
Yeah. It depends. That's actually why this is a good forum. I've fallen some other doctor now in the States, and particularly because I was 45 when I was diagnosed, but there's a much higher instance of men and women getting diagnosed between 40 and 50. Years ago, it was always kind of over 50 or 60. But now there's a big surge, and it's the two big ones are breast and colon.
Yeah.
So I really just get the message out there to everyone, you know, please check yourself.
Yeah.
Get your annual blood test, even once you're over 40, even if you're fobbed off, you're young. Don't just say, no, I want it. I need to find out. And get your blood pressure checked for your heart and any moles, bruises, lumps.
Yeah, and for men as well, as you're saying, Susan.
They're screening
now for bowel cancer as well, which is very, very straightforward.
Need to bring it down. Yeah. And breast check as well really needs to come down to 45. It's in the pipeline for the last few years, but as well as regular physical checks.
Yeah.
We're kind of behind in terms of like physical checks, you know, and to be an awareness. Now, the charity organisations out there are fantastic, but I do think our health service needs to step up there, you know,
but it's hard to believe, like we're talking about this today for obvious reasons, but it's hard to believe, like 4 weeks ago the government decided to cut back on the very modest amount of money that was being given to women who've had a mastectomy for
And now
they changed their mind after 48 hours.
Yeah.
But they still, they weren't thinking about the cutback. They actually implemented the cutback. And anyway, say with us, Susan. Deirdre, Deirdre, you had an open house. What does that mean?
Oh, well, what I was saying to the lady earlier on is that what I found really important when I was going through the treatment, no more than Susan, you're very ill and there's times when you're pretty spaced out and all over the place.
I'm fed up.
But I kind of kept going. I kept going to the theatre. I kept going to music. I kept going out for my lunch and out with the kids and as much as I possibly could. You have good weeks and bad weeks with chemotherapy, you know. But what I thought was very important was, you know, the kids at that age, there was a lot of sleepovers and parties and discos. It was pre-COVID. And I wanted to keep the house bright and alive and not have it all kind of shrouded in this anxiety around me and my cancer. So we found that, you know, everything in as so far as possible, Susan, my husband, was incredible. And sometimes I look now and say, Jesus, how did he do it? How did he keep the house going? And my dad was living with me at the time as well, who was in his 90s. So there was an awful lot to take care of. But the friends never stopped coming through the door, do you know?
Okay.
The parties still happened and we kept things as normal as possible. And I kept saying, I'll come back with the flowers, because I started chemo in Christmas and kind of finished chemo in May, you know. And then once you run into radiotherapy and surgery, I'm not saying it's not tough, but you're not as sick, you know, as you are during the chemo. But one piece of advice I would give, echoing Susan, no matter what age your kids are, what's best for you is what's best for them. So say, for example, when I was doing my radiotherapy, I had an option to go and stay in St. Luke's for, you know, during the week from Monday to Saturday, because your radiotherapy is just 5 or 10 minutes a day. But I live in County Meath. So if I was getting my treatment and then coming back, that'd be 3 hours kind of travel in a day and the radiotherapy not fell out yet. So having the opportunity of staying up in Dublin and staying in St. Luke's, it meant you didn't come home and start putting on a wash. Do you know what I mean? You just went to bed. And also, since I'm in a beautiful part of Dublin, so I was hopping in and out to the Abbey if I felt well, or, you know, to the parks around. And I still had good friends in Dublin. And So I actually, okay. bizarrely, like a friend of mine said, Jesus, dear, you'd enjoy yourself in a prison camp, you know? Like, but I actually kind of made the most of it. And that was good for my kids because that kept me buoyant and that kept me living. And then I'd be home at the weekend. And I think women in particular are not very good at being that little bit selfish, you know? Mm-hmm. They'd be running home to try and keep everything
good
going.
Good point.
But, yeah, that's my point.
And
there.
Deirdre, I'm told you, one of your children... When did we do one of the sessions? But I presume that was your 18-year-old, was it?
My 18-year-old was... Sorry, I missed your question.
No, one of your children went to one of your chemo sessions, which is not true.
She did, yeah. Shifra did, yeah. And like that, I kind of respected that the offer was made. I was under the matter.
Okay.
And there's a few things that you don't know, you know, and you get a little angel sitting in the visiting room or sitting just ahead of you at the doctor's office who'll turn around and give you a piece of key information
great.
That can make the world a difference to your treatment. I listened to everybody, took all advice, walked through every door they told me to go through. But there was this woman when I went in to have an MRI or a PET scan or whatever, and I was in bits, I was bawling. And this lady recognized me from the local area where I live in near Kells, County Meath. And she said, you know, what's the story? And I told her I'd just been diagnosed with breast cancer. And she said, Deirdre, if you're in the matter, you can actually get your treatment in Cavan Hospital, which is like a 45-minute drive,
wow.
no parking issues and all the rest, that there's a team from the matter in Cavan, and you can elect for that. And that was incredible because it meant I wasn't driving up and down to Dublin negotiating traffic.
Brilliant.
It was just much easier all round. And then one of the nurses there, it's like a nurse-run unit. It's absolutely brilliant. I still remember them so well.
And you found out that information in the waiting room talking to somebody.
In the waiting room talking to somebody, a tip. And we used to call each other like little angels and try and be an angel to somebody else. When you see them, you know, like in the depths of that great distress and fear and anxiety, you go over and you say, I'm 3 or 4 months in. I'm on my second bout of chemo. It's not as bad as you think it is.
Okay.
You know, and that kind of camaraderie within
the system, which just kind
of happens. It is absolutely brilliant. But it was one of the nurses said to me, would your daughter like to come in? And lots of people in the unit that I was in had members of family coming and sitting in with them. So Shiva came in for one of the sessions around Christmas, and then she could kind of see it for herself.
Okay.
And you know, kind of see the people around me. And then it wasn't as frightening for her, you know. Now, her sister opted not to.
Okay.
And I totally respected that as well, because different people have different approaches.
And what were the ages, if you don't mind me, after the two young women? When they
18 and 16,
yeah,
they were
okay,
at the time.
I understand.
Yeah,
stay with us, Deirdre. Maria Fleming. Maria, good afternoon.
I know, Maria. Joe, how are you?
And you're listening to Deirdre.
I am, and Deirdre was there talking about having angels, and Deirdre was my angel.
Okay.
When I was diagnosed, we work in the same business, and myself and my husband were actually out at the theatre the night before I got my final diagnosis. But we kind of knew the direction it was going at this stage, and Deirdre was talking to my husband and mentioned that she was just recovering from breast cancer, and she said she saw his face drop. And she immediately apologized, you know, going, oh, sorry, am I after upsetting you now, saying that? I don't know why I told you that. But like, little did she know that we were just at the start of our journey as she was coming out of hers. And Deirdre just gave so many useful pieces of information and advice. But apart from that, it was the amazing hugs Deirdre gave me every time I was her that got me through my cancer and my diagnosis.
And did you talk about telling your children?
We did, and actually I was out at the theatre one night and I met Deirdre and her daughter, and I managed to talk to her daughter, like, who had been through this stage, and I said, look, I'm torn about the idea. I'm thinking of telling my children's school. Should I give them a heads up? Because I was aware that they could get upset in school one day somebody not know. And Deirdre's daughter, you know, shared with me that, yes, she was glad that Mammy had told the school. So okay. I told my children's teachers, and also one of my daughter does ballet, and I told the ballet teacher just to keep an eye on that. And then I would keep them informed. Like, I'd ring the school and say, look, you know, my hair is all gone since yesterday, so we're in another phase. That could be, keep an eye. And the school were so brilliant with us and so brilliant with my kids. But I would support everything that all the previous speakers have said. But if I could just share, Joe, as a result of my experience, I started volunteering with the Irish Cancer Society, and I'm now on the board of the Irish Cancer Society. And one thing I would like to say to everybody who's listening, nobody has to go through this alone. And if there's people who want to keep it private and don't want their work known or don't want their neighbours known, that you can do it whatever way you want. And the Irish Cancer Society are always at the end of a phone. There's booklets. There's actually a booklet, How to Speak to Your Children About Cancer. There's information on the website. But whatever way you want to go this journey, you don't have to do it on your own. And I certainly didn't have Deirdre Kinahan in my corner. Thank you, Dee.
Okay. And then one of the, if not the major worry for Kate and William is that, given that they're two of the most famous people in the world, that if others found out, it could be said to their children in the playground or at their normal children, by all accounts, at school or whatever. That wasn't a worry that, or maybe it is, do people worry that other children might say something, your mammy has cancer or whatever awful phrases that that are said without any malice, by the way.
Yeah, of course, and just the queries that they have. And, like, children have a lot more information than we give them credit for.
Yeah,
I remember
being
blown away with my daughter, like, when I sat them down and told them and said I was going to have chemotherapy. And I said, she said, will you lose your hair? And I said, I probably will. And she said, will you not get that cap thing?
Okay.
I didn't know what the cap thing was. I'd never heard of it before, but my daughter knew it. And I said, you know, that's the cold cap and people get that. I said, but I think that's more Hollywood cancer, and I have Dublin cancer.
I love it. That's Hollywood cancer. I have Dublin cancer. Brilliant. Stay with us.
Can I just say?
Yes,
that,
of course.
The danger of the Hollywood cancer is that, like, people look at that and they see somebody throwing up, like, every minute of every day when they show it on the day. I didn't throw up once, you know, so everybody reacts differently. So don't take what you've seen on the television as, you know, your cancer cancer, your treatment and your experience will be yours. Yeah.
Okay, stay with us. Joe@rt.ie, 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe@rt.ie. Pauline, good to hear from you, Pauline Fulham. Pauline, you say it's better to tell the children straight out.
I do, Joe. I really think that it is much better to tell children straight away, because children will always know when you're hiding something.
Okay.
I think we don't give kids enough credit. They're able to deal with a lot more than we give them credit for.
What was your experience, Pauline, your own story?
In 2019, December of 2019, I was initially diagnosed with stage one, which I was told was very treatable. And within 3 weeks, biopsies and so forth came back that I was stage four.
Mm.
So at 48 years old, that was a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had sat down to tell the kids before I actually got the stage four diagnosis.
Okay.
That may have changed how I told them. But actually, I sat down with them at the kitchen table after dinner and said, Mammy is well, but unfortunately, Mam has found a lump, and the lump is bad, and the lump is dangerous, and the lump needs to be taken away.
Okay.
And I'll have to go through chemotherapy, which is going to make me sick, in order to make me better at the end of it. My kids were 11 and 14. And my 14-year-old girl was very in tune with what that might entail. And as Maria was saying, you know, the Hollywood cancer was actually in Dublin. So I did the cold cap. Managed to hold on to the hair, and I think that helped a lot. But she was definitely able to manage all of that. And still to this day, 4 years later, every single evening will say to me, "Ma'am, do you want a cup of tea?" You know,
very kind. Just be careful. And Pauline, is there anything that wasn't around then that you wish there had been, if you follow me?
No, not really. I got help from the Irish Cancer Society, so thank you to Deirdre for all of the work that she does with the Irish Cancer Society. I rang their hotline to actually know how would I break it down for them. I had gone through it with my mum when I was 10. She was diagnosed with cancer, had a mastectomy, and I wasn't told at the time, and I didn't find out until I was 17. And it sounds quite selfish to say it, but I was upset that why didn't she tell me?
I'm also conscious, as you say, that, Paddy, and as we discovered so many times here in Lifeline, cancer is much more common than we sometimes think. And again, the caveat is that the vast majority, thank God, come through it. Stay with us, Pauline. Inya, sorry for holding you there. Inya, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. It's Ina.
Ina, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. And tell us your situation, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree with Pauline. I think it's very important to be honest with your children. And also, I would like to say that it is always harder on the people around you. It's always harder on your family and friends. So let them in and be as honest as you can. Now, everybody is different, of course, but, you know. And also, I want to say there's a life after a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, please say that and please repeat it as many times as you wish.
Yeah, I've a stage 4 cancer diagnosis and I've... Anyone who knows me knows how well I live. And I live every day like it's my last. And I have the best life ever, I have to say. But I do know that it's going to be harder on my family and friends. You know, I have wonderful, wonderful friends.
And tell us about your children, given the context we're talking about.
Yeah, well, mine are a bit older. I think my daughter was about 19 and my son was 24 when they were... But that said, my daughter has her own... issues, and it was very important for me to be honest with her and with my son, and I still am to this day. I tell them I'm going in on Wednesday now for another. I know what's coming. Basically, there's more treatment coming on the brain, but I am fine about that. I have the best oncologists in the country, I think, and a great team of nurses and doctors. Fabulous. And I couldn't be well looked after, you know. So I'm in great form, and I'm very, very open with the people around me, so it makes it easier on them, you know, Joe.
And
so
how soon did you tell? I know your children were much older than what we're talking about, but how soon did you tell them?
Well, the night I went to the Beacon A&E and. Basically had an X-ray in St. Michael's in Dunleary, and I knew when they rang me and said there was something on the lung. Now, I've never smoked a day in my life, so I have stage 4 lung cancer, but I was in bed, immediately brought into the Beacon, and my husband was away, but my friends and my sister and my sister-in-law, they came up and they rallied round, and then we told the children within the next few days, basically, do you know? And they've been fantastic. I have two great children, very supportive. And I hope that they just continue after I'm gone. They continue to, you know, show the love that they've shown me.
And Ina, were you conscious of other people knowing outside the family? And did that make a difference?
Yeah, I'm a very, very open person. I mean, I'm mortified on the radio now, but actually anyone who knows me knows how I'm very chatty, very able to, you know, love people,
great,
love being around people, and I have my tribe, and I know that I'm not afraid of dying because I know that when it comes to that stage, I'll be surrounded, and I want to be surrounded. Uh-huh. I don't want to die alone, you know. So, yeah, I'm very open about it, Joe. And, yeah, I'm booking holidays left, right and centre. Anyone who's free can come with me. I'm off to Nice on Friday with my friend Dee. And, okay. Yeah, so but that's my advice to anyone.
But given what you're saying to me, you know, is that not hard? You know, people say, well, I have my bucket list. I'm not presuming that's your case here.
I do have a bucket list, yeah. Okay. I do.
I have a bucket list, but people forget, hang on, I'd love to do this, and I'd love to do Niagara Falls, and I'd love to do...
Do it. Do it.
Yeah,
but
you mightn't be well. You mightn't
true.
Be fine.
I agree. I, from the beginning, was very lucky because they couldn't operate on the tumour.
Okay.
So I count myself lucky. I'm a glass half full person. Because
okay.
I didn't have an operation, I didn't have to deal with that, Joe. Whereas a lot of people have to deal with an operation. So they're starting, they're not, you know, not starting at a great
okay.
level. They're sick and they're unwell. And also I had chemo radiation together and I was strong enough and I flew through it, in my opinion anyway. Maybe the medical staff would disagree, but I flew through that. And then we went on to immunotherapy. And I was just saying to your researcher there that we had to pay for that ourselves because, unfortunately, it wasn't available.
Okay.
This was in 2020. It wasn't available to the VHI or the HSC didn't cover it. So if I, you know, to give myself another shot, we had to pay for that very, very expensive treatment. And then I'm now on an oral treatment. It's a targeted therapy, Gene. It specifically targets my type
okay.
of cancer. And yeah, that's a lifesaver. That is actually keeping me alive. So I take that every day and very little side effects. So I'm really living
well
life,
done.
Honest to God.
Yeah, yeah,
bit
yeah.
of weight.
Well done. Well, no, well, I'm going to say well done. People... I don't attribute any issue in terms of people being fed up when they get it or saying I'm going to best foot forward or whatever. Everyone did well done to the medics and well done to the health service and well done
Absolutely.
To the pharmaceutical companies. Now,
there's a point. I was at my friend Monique and Billy Tompkins. Monique is a cancer survivor. And every Bad Daffodil Day, they hold a fabulous fundraiser in Kiltearnan. And it's so important to keep giving for research as well.
Yeah.
Because the drug I'm on wasn't out 10 years ago,
yeah.
5
yeah.
years ago
yeah.
in Ireland. Do you know what I mean? It's only been, what's the word I'm looking for in Ireland in the last 5 years or so? Do you know? Approved.
And that's...
So,
when you hear John Crown speaking from St. Vincent's, that's one of the things he always says, no matter where he's been interviewed, there have been more positive developments in the treatment of cancer. In the last month,
absolutely.
In the last 3 months, I came across a paper or whatever.
My oncologist is Dr. Jenny Westrup in the Beacon, and
okay.
she's a fabulous lady. She's American,
brilliant.
And she is constantly researching. So as she says to me, Ina, when this one runs out, I have something else.
Brilliant.
Up my armour for you.
Brilliant. And you know, you said I was diagnosed stage 4 lung cancer and I never smoked.
Yeah.
Were you angry?
No, and one of the things she said to me when I was diagnosed was, did anyone ever smoke? And I said, who didn't?
Back
you know, our parents, everybody around us, in the pubs, in work. And I wasn't actually, I wasn't angry.
Okay.
Because... there's nothing you can do.
You didn't do the why me.
No, I did not. This is another point I'd say to people: don't take to the bed, because if I'd taken to the bed, my physical health would have gone downhill, which then leads to other issues, health issues. I actually did the opposite. I said, no, damn it, cancer's not going to get me. I'm going to fight it. I'm going to enjoy every single minute I have left, and whether that's 4 or 5 years, so far it's 4.5 years, or whether it's, you know, I had hoped to have a 55th birthday in November, they're gone. But between the jigs and the reels, my poor dog went missing up the mountains and my heart is broken. So I couldn't face having a birthday party. Do you know what I mean? So
nah.
Watch this space. Maybe next year I'll have a big bash.
Okay.
But I'm actually loving life, Joe.
How are you today? How are you feeling?
Today, right now.
Are you feeling as good as you sound?
I am. I'm sitting outside my mother-in-law's house. She's 89 with dementia and I'm about to visit her. And my own mum is down the country with Alzheimer's. And I have a great little circle of, things to keep. I don't work anymore because I just don't have the physical energy. But I save my energy for socialising. And I've lots of friends who might be listening to this, laughing and chuckling around. I was in town on Friday night with some of them, so I'm a bit of a socialite, I have to say. But thank God I'm able to put 2 feet on the ground and walk. You know, that's the most important thing.
And well done you, and well done the health service, and well done the medics, and well done the pharma companies as well.
Thanks
a million. That's Ina is in Wicklow. Shifra O'Farrell, Shifra, your mother is on the other line, I'm told, Deirdre.
Yes, she is.
And what age were you? You were 18, is that correct?
Yeah, I was 18.
Yeah, okay.
I was 6 years.
And what give us your perspective on when your mother sat yourself and Kiva, isn't that your sister's name? Give me your sister's
Saive,
name.
Saive, yeah.
Saive, yeah, okay, yeah. When she sat the two of you down.
Well, I remember it. Like, I remember it really vividly. It's one of the things, like, because I was doing my leave and cert, so I was really, really busy doing a lot of other things. But it was in December, maybe the end of November, December. And Mom and Dad just sat us down, and Dad was like, "Oh, like, we need to talk about like your mom's health." And I just looked at my sister, and I could see all over her face she was freaking.
Okay.
So I was like, "Okay, right, like, let's go through this." And as like my mom said, like, to piggyback off what she said, I did know something was up before it, and I did get like, I was getting annoyed. Like, I wasn't voicing it or anything, but I was getting annoyed because I knew something was up and that I wasn't being told it. Like, they'd be dropping me to, like, I had to go in early to school one day, and they dropped me in, and I was like, "Where are you going?" And they were like, "Oh, we're going to a retirement thing." And I was like, "Why is that on at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday morning? Like, that doesn't make any sense."
Okay.
So I was aware that stuff was going on, but I kind of, like, I had no idea the extent of it or anything. But the best thing that Mom ever did was wait until she knew everything. Because then every question I had when they sat us down and told us, I could get an answer immediately.
And you did. But you said at one stage you were annoyed.
I was, yeah, no, I did. I got annoyed because we're a family that, like, nothing's a secret. Like, we do tell each other everything. And it was at a stage where I knew that something was wrong. And I was getting frustrated that I wasn't being told.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in the back of my head, I was like, well, maybe there is a reason, but that kind of didn't stop it, because I was like, Jesus, like, I'm 18 now, I'm in sixth year, like, which is not just tell me, like, I'm an adult, but I think it was the best thing that they didn't until they knew everything.
And they knew, which was your mother's initial point. And, Shifra, do you remember going with your mum to the session?
I do, yeah. No, I remember. It was during the Christmas break, so I was off school, and someone always went with Mom, and Dad was supposed to be working, and I don't think there was necessarily an issue change in his roster to be able to go with her, but I think I was like, well, sure, I'm at home, I'll go with you, it's grand. And it did give me a sense of comfort, because, like, I could see everything that was going on, like, all these people had, like, family members around them, and I suddenly realized it wasn't quite as scary as it sounds once you actually see what happened,
once you demystify it, in one sense, once you take all the perceived images out of your head and actually see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I think that really helped kind of, like, humanize it a bit, for lack of a better word.
Yeah,
like,
great word, yeah.
It wasn't as scary as, like, you're thinking, like, oh, big massive hospital, needles, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I have never even knew how chemotherapy was administered before I went with my mom that time. And obviously it's not for everyone, because it can be quite traumatic, but if you feel like you're up to it, I would. Like, wouldn't say I necessarily recommend it, but it's not as scary as anything that's in your head about it.
Well put, yeah. It's not as scary as anything that's in your head about it. Well done, Shifra. I know your mum's articulate, but you have a competitor there, Deirdre.
I do indeed. She's gaffed. She's down in Galway. I didn't know she was going to ring in. Yeah. But yeah, fair play to her. Look, she was a rock, her sister, her dad. And like that's another thing. My advice, and I would agree with Marie and Pauline and some of the other people, everybody has their own way of dealing with it. And, you know, everybody, you know, has a right to deal with it in their way. But I wouldn't be afraid to ask for help or take the help when it's offered. And just to say, Joe, like the little kindnesses, like that there's my chemist is up in Nobber. And I remember when it all kicked off, like the chemist actually gave me his mobile number, because there are some weekends you can be very sick with various side effects.
Well done, yeah.
But also every time I went up to, you know, collect a prescription, the lovely woman there, Catherine, she'd do something like put in a little hand cream or a little eyeliner or whatever. Like people are incredible. People
That's
come
lovely.
To your door with dinners and, you know, the post. Man just didn't know what was going on with books and flowers, and like people are incredible, and don't be afraid to take the help, you know, and from your kids too.
And Deirdre,
like,
just
the kids were brilliant.
The point about and I don't expect every pharmacy, but pharmacies and farmers staff and pharmacy are just so brilliant. Deirdre, when you said the pharmacist gave you your mobile, his mobile, sorry,
yeah,
and what were he or she? What were they saying to you as they gave you that mobile number?
Well, he would say, you know, look, if there's a weekend, the pharmacy would open, you know, Monday to Friday and then a half day and Saturday.
Yeah.
Vernon, who's a lovely fella up, he's retired since, but he said, look, if there's a Sunday and you're, you know, you're vomiting or you've got a terrible rash, you get these terrible mouth ulcers or there's various side effects. And he said, and if you need anything, just ring me.
Fantastic.
It is incredible. I found, and like you're talking about the HSE as well. We've a little greenway near me here in County Meath that just opened a few years ago. And I'm telling you, it's not an evening I walk up it, but I don't see two or three people I know have been through cancer, and I just thank HSE every single day, you know. They're brilliant, Joe, and kind of psychologically as well, and I'm sure Shiva and everybody else will reiterate this, you know, they only feed you as much information as they think you can manage.
Yeah, okay.
And but every time I had a fear, you know, I felt that they knew, they're so experienced, you know, that they were well able to talk to you about your family, about telling your kids, about every aspect of it. And I just took all their advice verbatim. And I walked through every door they advised me to go through. And you just, there's a great saying, this too will pass. So no matter how bad you feel one day, no matter how miserable you are, you look at yourself in the mirror and you think, holy God, that isn't even me looking back out at me. Just say to yourself, this too will pass. This, and it's little things. Like, I remember one day in the hospital, they had, I don't know what was going on, but they had a kind of a beautician in.
Okay.
And they were doing makeup classes with you. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but as a woman, you know, going through something like that, and you're at your absolute lowest, somebody just kind of helping you how to fluff up the eyebrows or whatever,
brilliant,
it makes
brilliant,
the world of
brilliant.
A difference, you know?
And
it's
what
the little thing.
And Deirdre, by the way, Shifra, when will you see your mom? I presume Easter. What are you doing in Galway? You're not on a day trip, are you, Shifra?
No, I'm actually, I work in the school, so it's off now for the
brilliant.
Next 2 weeks. So I'm down, my sister lives in Galway, so I'm down visiting her. Mom's actually heading off to Germany to go writing for a couple of weeks. So I'll see her when she comes home.
Oh, she did. Where are you going in Germany, Deirdre?
I'm going to a place called Mainz near Frankfurt. I'm a playwright, so I work with theatres all over the world. So I'm going over to write a new play for a state theatre in Germany. So
as you do, as you do.
As you do.
As you do. Well done, well done. Stay with us. Shifra, schools haven't closed yet, have they, Shifra? What do you say, fourth level or second level?
Sorry, what did you say?
Are you primary or second level teacher?
I'm not a teacher. I work in an after school service.
Oh, well done, well done. Great. Yeah. Okay, Shifra, I'm going to keep your mother with us whether she likes it or not. But Shifra, go to Mila Margaret. That's Shifra Farrell, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And it's good, Deirdre, and I'm very conscious of yourself and Chifra and our other callers as well, Enya and Pauline and Maria and Susan, that we still, I don't know how long it's going to last, but we're still in a country where we can have a national conversation like this, where people do, I sit back and where people talk to each other, especially women. Niamh O'Leary. Niamh, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. What was your... You had three adult children. Tell us about it.
I have three adult children, yes. I was diagnosed with cancer on the 15th of November.
Okay.
I went in for... Actually, I went in with a routine mammogram that they discovered it. And I had it looked actually then on the 5th of December. So with my kids are a lot older, and I'm actually going to finish my second cycle of chemotherapy there on Friday. So I had to get my head. Well, what I did was, when I knew I was going to lose hair, they had me on a drug that I will. He said to me, "You will lose your hair." So okay. I decided, well, do I? I had kind of a bob style, and I said, "Well, I do. Do I sit and wait for this to come out in clumps, or do I go and get a cut short?" So I went and got a cut short. Actually, it looked much better short than it did long. So, and then I went to Roche's, and they deal with people that are on chemotherapy cancer. They do with wigs, and I'm sure there's loads of other places.
Yeah, of course.
But I decided to go and get my wig with them, and I had with the lovely lady called Patricia, who presented three wigs similar to the hairstyle I had before.
Okay.
And because they advise you to go there first because, you know, they try and match your hair up. So I got a wig anyway, and I asked them, would they mind if I got my own hairdresser to do it? And they said, no, certainly not. They advised me accordingly, like how to care for it and whatever. So then, so that's when I had decided I'd cut my hair because I hadn't had it cut before I went to get the wig because I had to see what the hairstyle was like. And I got a cut then anyway, and then I had my first chemotherapy there in the beginning of March, and I thought, this is great, no sign of the hair coming out. And then the next minute, the second week, she did say between the second and third week, it would start falling out, so it started to fall out.
Wow.
So I was kind of a bit upset because, you know, you can understand with women, our hair is, you know,
absolutely.
It's off. Yeah. And knew that the day would come when I'd have to make the decision, so I decided to make I had my chemotherapy, the second thing, on Friday. I was determined to go into the hospital with some hair. And my daughter, she looked at the back and said, "Mom, just as well you can't see the back of it." I said, "Thank God I can't see the back of it. It's all patchy and fallen out in clumps." So anyway, my son came out in solidarity with me, my younger son, Fionn. He's 24, sorry. And he came in with me to the hairdressers, and my hairdresser was lovely. He made a big, you know, he closed the shop, number one, which I was very appreciative because they're very busy.
Lovely, yeah.
And he said to me, "Now, I'll come out to the house if you want it done." I want to get it done here. So in I went, and we just made a joke. He tried a few wigs on Fionn before he shaved him. I started to shave off of Fionn, and then Fionn started to shave off my hair. So I thought, I look quite well bald, bit of makeup. Okay. So anyway, yeah, but it was the experience that made it so, you know, not like, "God, you're losing your hair tub or you're getting your hair shut," but very happy. It was a laugh. We had a laugh. Fionn tried on wigs. We took pictures of each other. And my head, the finished product of the wig is perfect. It's grand. Like, but I decided that I'd wear it. It's uncomfortable to wear. So I found it a bit uncomfortable when I came out of the hairdressers because they just shave. It's like, how to explain what the shave is like. You still have a little bit of tufted hair. So it was very prickly. So it hurt me a bit. But I've been wearing the bandana, you know, thing. And I opened, that's funny, my best friend, doorbell doesn't work. And I opened the door to the postman today and he said, you can wear a little skull cap in bed to keep your head warm. And he nearly dropped the parcel on the ground when he saw me with his cap on. And in answer to your question, my daughter is a teacher here in Dublin, and my son is one of my sons is in Abu Dhabi. So he found it. I had to tell him on Zoom. Ah. Well, actually, the kids, they have a WhatsApp group themselves, so the kids had told him.
Ah, okay.
My daughter Ashley, you know,
couldn't understand why, if they've got the lumpectomy, Mom, why are you going through treatment? I said, look, it's preventive treatment. It's not, you know, it's because I've had breast cancer, just to make sure that they catch the bugger and he doesn't come back, you know. So she kind of was a bit upset in that end of things. And then she said, oh, well, what about me? And I said, well, look, you'll have to keep an eye on your breast, because, like, she's only 30 now, because it's in the family. My mother had breast cancer as well. So, but...
And Niamh, can I ask you, what was the chemotherapy like in your case? I know it's different.
In my case, yeah. Well, I went in I'm in the matter public, and they actually give you a little video tour before you go in. So you're not afraid of it, and they bring you in if they can. And I went in, and I just saw all these people, and I said, "Oh my God!" When they brought me around for the video thing. And I just kind of, they give you loads of information at your first appointment with the special care nurse. So she says.
Oh, your line is gone on me. Okay, we'll get the line back. Don't worry. We're talking to Niamh O'Leary. By the way, before I'll take a break in a second, just to remind you, this coming Thursday, this coming Thursday, we are in the Landmark Hotel in Carrick and Shannon with lots of the Funny Friday crew, and everyone is welcome, and it should be good fun and lots of giveaways, and as usual, totally and absolutely completely free. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Noel, good afternoon, Noel.
Good afternoon to you, Joe.
And you want to join in the conversation with your own story. Please do, Noel. You're very welcome.
Well, no, I was just listening to those lovely ladies explaining when they went through cancer. And it just brought back memories of my own wife. She had a mastectomy in 2004.
Okay.
Now, our children weren't the problem because they were adults. But... our two grandchildren.
No, I got to try and get a better line, because every story is important. But I just want to try and get a better line. Stay with us, and I'll go to Yvonne Joy. Yvonne, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. And your contribution, please, Yvonne.
Yeah, well, I'm just conscious too, being through it myself. There's probably someone in a car somewhere now, just got a diagnosis, and it's the scariest place to be. So okay. I just want to acknowledge that person, and because I love that person. And we often hear about the brave battles. And then when you get it, I didn't feel one bit brave. So
of
I just
course,
want to say
yeah.
that first. But I'm 14 years out, so that's a hopeful message. And you said life after cancer surviving and thriving. So, but going back to the theme of this, my kids were 14, 11 and 9.
Okay.
So they were too old to hide it from them. And kind of too young for them to know everything. But I do agree with letting them know as swiftly as possible. And my treatment moved very swiftly. So
okay.
I was literally lumped Monday. By Friday, I was diagnosed. And like that, I didn't know what to say. You know, I mean, how do you tell your kids? And first, my husband said, we've got to tell them, because unfortunately, and I've often wondered about this, 50% of mothers in my eldest son's class all got diagnosed with cancer. So that's something that always stayed with me. But so cancer was a word.
Say that again, Yvonne.
50% of the mothers in my eldest kid's class, Adam's class, all had a form of cancer. Not all of them are here with us.
Okay.
So cancer was a word that was being used, and, you know, and it was out there. So when we came home and we just knew we needed to save them. I remember it's a funny story, and it's a comforting story. And but we brought them in, my 14-year-old, my 11-year-old boy, and my 9-year-old daughter, sat them down. And that week, like that, they know something's going on, because I had to ask people to collect my kids because I was going for this appointment, that appointment. And you can't pretend to kids, because they get the sense that, well, this is a breaking routine, what's going on. So they got it. So we sat them down, and the breast care nurse had warned me of this: don't be surprised if they preempt you. Which I thought was actually brilliant, because I really wouldn't have anticipated it.
Okay.
But in fairness, I was sitting them down, and next thing he goes to me, actually, do you have cancer? And I was shocked, and I just said, actually, I do, Adam, I do. Mm. And then he said, my little girl said then, but Mammy, isn't cancer bad? Isn't cancer a bad thing?
Okay.
And I said, well, you know, Lord, cancer is a word. It's kind of like animal. Mm-hmm. Animal can refer to a tiger, and it can refer to a dog. And you'd never take a tiger on your lap and stroke it, but you would take a dog. Now, I said, they tell me at the moment I have a dog with cancer. So that's the way I put it.
Brilliant.
And the funny thing is, and so suddenly we said, we're going to McDonald's, but my middle fella had said nothing. And I was kind of conscious of that, so I held him back. I said, you're very quiet, and he's my sensitive fella. And he said, I said, you okay? Do you want to say anything? And he said, God, Mum, I thought you were going to tell us you're going to have another baby. I didn't know whether to cry or laugh. But then after that, later on in the day, my daughter was hanging around a little bit, and I knew she wanted to ask more questions. So I just said to her, I said, are you okay with what me and Dad said? Yeah, look, she said, would you mind now not telling anyone that? I said, you don't want me to tell anyone that I have cancer. Yeah, no, if you wouldn't mind now, don't tell anyone that.
Okay.
And, I said, well, she said, you can tell people about the cancer, but maybe not the breast part.
Okay.
And it suddenly dawned on me, she was, I suppose I've, you know, when I wear my kids age appropriately, you saw your privates are private. And suddenly I was using a word quite casually. I didn't see that one coming either. And I said, will I just say cancer? And she said, if you wouldn't mind. And she said, would you only say it to the grown-ups? I don't want all my friends knowing. And I said, okay. Now, like, I suppose William and Kate, this is what their drive was, to protect their kids' hearing in the schoolyard. And I knew that was unavoidable. And I said, is there any way, I said, the only thing about saying breast cancer, thankfully, I said, breast cancer is very curable. So we want everyone, everyone to know we're all right. We're going to be all right. Oh, well, that's okay then, because I want all my friends to know you're going to be all right. So that was, you're navigating it. And really what it was about being very attuned to them and leaning into them and seeing where they needed it. And all we did in the beginning is just tell them that I'm going for an operation. The cancer is going to be taken out. And that was enough for the day.
Yeah, right.
And quite like that, I didn't know my treatment, and I was about 5 weeks later, and they're running tests, and that's the horrible part, because you think the worst. And then they told me I have chemo and radiotherapy. So then we had to deal with the hair loss, and once again, I said, how do you want to work the hair loss? Because I waited till after Christmas for all of that, and I said, now I have to go for this treatment. The cancer's gone. It's really just to clean it all up, but unfortunately, you lose hair. And they were horrified. And I said, okay, I can get a wig and it'll be placed on my head. Yeah, we like that. So initially I just wanted bandanas, but it wasn't about me. It was about them. So I wore wigs the whole time, because they just wanted me. Kids just want
to
blend in with everybody else. So I just wore wigs. And even in the house, like if they came into the bedroom, I said, no, step back now a minute. There's a little bit of dressing to be done here. And that was the way it was. So we just told them suffice for the day. But like that, I felt if we didn't tell them, they'd never trust anything we'd say. And
who was it? Yvonne, who was it? Was it Adam that said to you, do you have cancer?
Yeah, he did.
And did you ever, how did he sense it? How did he?
Kids take it all in. Yeah. Kids take it in. And he knew something was odd. I mean, I would normally be at the school gate collecting the kids. That was that time in my life where I was always there. And it was very unusual that it would be kind of 3 times in the same week that I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not stupid, and we bring them up to be intuitive. We bring them up to trust their gut, and we can't then blame it and then use it against us when we want to camouflage it. But I was glad I was warned of that, because that would have probably rendered me a little bit speechless. But he just lost it. And as I said, in that classroom, there was a lot of cancer.
Yeah. And a lot of survivors, obviously.
And a lot of survivors. Yeah, and that's the other thing I just want to say, because I got involved with the Marie Keating Foundation.
Oh,
and because like that, one of the biggest things for me personally as a woman, as an individual, was I really was waiting for Yvonne to come back to Yvonne. I kept waiting for my life to get back to normal. I went through the cancer, I went through the treatment, and I kept saying, right, I'm done now, it's finished. When am I coming back? And of course, I wasn't coming back. I was kind of grieving for the Yvonne I was. I mean, I had troubles before cancer, but I now romanticized her as someone who was trouble-free and had this wonderful existence.
because now this was a serious problem. So it took a long time to adjust that. That carefree Yvonne isn't coming back, but a new Yvonne came back. But it just took a while to kind of let go the other Yvonne. And I found the emotional journey afterwards, when you're told what to do, the roadmap, a lot of people would share this with me. It's great. The doctors tell you where to turn up. You turn up, you do. You're told you've got an army of people who are lovely and helping you and all that. But then afterwards, you don't want to say, I'm floundering, because I've just now really grasping with the fact that I went through this. So I've gotten involved with the Marie Keegan Foundation there. It's a free course. It's a six-week course. And literally, it's a self-management course.
Okay, you've written a book.
I did. I wrote it. It's not a walkthrough. Somebody said to me, I'd written a book before, and unfortunately we lost a child along the way, 10 fingers and 10 toes. And and again, it's more these are big traumas on people. You know, I compared my cancer very much to the loss of our little boy, is that, you know, these come in, but they affect family life. They don't just affect you. They affect your husband. They affect your kids. And this book, An Inconvenient Year, it was really just about the emotional impact. It's not a walk down corridors of medicines and all that. I couldn't read those myself when I was going through it. It's really just, how do you deal with your children? How do you deal with your husband? You know, I always say breast cancer, particularly, undresses a woman in a way a lover never would. It takes away all your beauty, your hair, your breast. But it all comes back. The body is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a faithful dog. It'll rally. It'll be laid down, but it'll come back. And it's all come back. You know, and I just want to assure that I am now nearly 15 years out, and it's all come back. And I have, you know, and I've been able to see my children grow. Actually, we're empty nesters as of 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, I've seen them reared, and I'm very grateful for that.
Okay,
but it is about being proactive about your health.
And
you
the
know?
Book is called An Inconvenient Year. Published by Maverick House, and you'll just Google that and you'll get it quick enough. Yvonne, thanks indeed. That's Yvonne. Joy, joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Vivian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joseph. How are you?
And you say your adult daughters were with you.
I'm bloody rotten. They were.
Okay.
Now, that lady, that book, she's fantastic.
Okay, Yvonne.
That lady you're having on there, and the other ladies. All of them are brilliant.
And you say
in my case, Joe.
Okay, yes.
My husband, Lord Eston, he had passed with cancer. He only got a year.
Mm-hmm.
He had terminal cancer.
Okay.
And when he passed, which was hard, we looked after him at home. He passed at home. And then 2014, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Right.
Now, like that too, it wasn't in my family. And as Prof. McCaffrey said, I was the first. It starts now with me, if you get me.
Okay.
But my two daughters were with me.
Yeah.
The problem with my case, Joe, was I had 15 grandchildren. Aged from say 20 down to 4 and 5.
Okay.
Now, the hair started to go, like that lady said, within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
With the chemotherapy, and the little ones, did scream. The baby wouldn't come near me.
Okay.
When I decided to shave it off.
When they saw Granny, yeah.
And it was horrific for them, and for them, to come in and. One day they were there, Nanny had hair. The next day, Nanny had nothing. There was one particular one of the grandkids, and she just stand, put her finger in her mouth, staring at me as if I was a monster. Like, no, I don't mean that way.
I know.
But the effect it had on them was, you know, it does take its toll, and you have to. I couldn't tell the little ones. Nanny's not well, we could say.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know what cancer would mean, you know, and just Nanny's not well, and I had to get my hair shaved, and I'm going to get new hair, and it's an awful thing.
And your youngest grandchild got upset when they saw you, Vivian, when they saw
did.
Granny.
Yeah, they'd look at me, and they wouldn't come near, the babies, babies.
And how did you get over that?
They wouldn't come to me, you know. no, 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 you know, and they'd be looking at me and looking at me, staring at me, and up to the 6 or 7 year olds, they'd sit in the chair and look at me as if I wasn't the nanny that they saw.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
3-4 weeks ago, you know, and been ill, and it's, but what I wanted to point out, Joe, is,
okay,
now from that I have heart failure.
Oh.
From the chemo, I had developed heart failure.
That's
so as I speak to you.
Yeah, that's unusual, is it?
It's very unusual.
Yeah,
It just, I had a bad time, which is, it took 12 months for me to have the chemo. I took a very bad reaction. And exactly what that girl said, the ulcers in your mouth, the ulcers in your esophagus. It's horrific, the treatment. But Joe, as I said to your search in there, as long as your head is above, my head is above ground.
Okay.
Once my head is above ground, it's staying above ground.
Well done, yeah.
Positive thinking.
Yeah.
I don't allow myself to think about it.
Okay, I'm staying to...
And when someone mentions cancer, I don't say, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
That's the reaction you get.
I know.
I'm sorry to hear that. People don't know what to say to you, Joe.
And what did what would you find helpful, do you think, for people to say to you, Vivian? What would you say when people say to you?
And a lot of the things, one of the things would too, what I would say to people, don't say you look well.
Okay.
People do often say to me, well, you look great. And I feel like saying, well, I don't bloody feel great, you know.
Okay.
And they don't know what to say,
yeah.
obviously. So your natural reaction is first is, oh, I'm so sorry. That's another thing. Just say, oh, well, hopefully things will work out. Things do work out, Joe.
Well said,
and all
well
those
said.
Ladies that are suffering it now, tell them all from me, 2014, I'm 77 years of age.
Great.
And as I speak to you, I'm still here.
Of course you are.
Three, four times, I'm only out of the matter last Tuesday.
Well done.
But I'm still here, Joe. I'm still happy.
Yeah, and you're still...
I don't allow it. Don't let it get to you.
Yeah.
And Kate Middleton, I feel so sorry for
her. Yeah, it's a lot of people.
And the
do,
papers,
yeah.
the way they've slated that poor lady. And you're, she's enough on her plate. We all have enough on our plate, being told this, without people surmising. So speak about it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not that girl.
It's going. I just
that
want...
lady there. Sorry.
Yvonne, yeah. Now, stay with us, Yvonne. Now you're referring to Yvonne. Stay with us, Vivian, because I want to get Noel in again. Noel Cohen. Noel, good afternoon again.
How are you doing, Joe? Yeah. I don't know how much
you told me your wife had a mastectomy in 2004.
Yes. Now, Joe, our problem wasn't with our children. They were adults.
Okay.
Our problem was we had two grandchildren, two
like
girls.
Vivian, yeah.
Age 9 and 5. And listening to Yvonne there, I'm so pleased that we took the action that we did, because we decided that if they came along someday and Nolene's hair had started to disappear, that it might have an awful effect on them.
Okay.
So we got a hairdresser to the house. The family were here and Nolene got her hair shaved off. Now, the effect of that, Joe, was that anything that followed after that was much easier. We obviously had explained that we were going to do that. But anything that happened after that, and I sympathise with all those ladies that had to go through chemo, because I was only on the periphery, but it's a horrible thing. There's actually poison going into the body. And what those ladies have to go through, the word of hope there is that they recovered, Nolene recovered. Most people do recover.
Yeah,
thank God for that. But, you know, actually, it was funny. The youngest grandchild, 5, as those ladies would know, when you've had your chemo session, Nolene would wear a bandana. But during the weeks before the next chemo session, the hair would start to grow back. And my youngest granddaughter, oh, Nanny, your hair is coming back, you know. But then, unfortunately, when she would have the next session, that was gone. You know, it's a horrible, horrible time, but there is recovery, thank God.
Okay, and have the conversations. Okay, Noel, go to Mila Margaret, Noel, Vivian, Deirdre, all the other callers, thank you so much, especially the callers we couldn't get to. Sincere apologies. And thanks indeed for having that very, very informative conversation nationally. On sound, Damien Chanel's research, Richie Byrne, producer Nadine Maloney. And remember, in the Landmark Hotel in Carrick on Shannon this coming Thursday. And Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.